This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here. Thank you so much for listening and making us a part of your day. Rob Brenton is here as well. We will get to a very controversial statement that Rob Brenton made on this radio program yesterday. I kid you not, someone came up to Rob at work today and asked him to repeat his controversial stance. He then repeated it. They had a back and forth. The gentleman asked Rob, "Do you plan on talking about this on the air?" And he says, "It doesn't matter what I say because they'll just blame Carrington anyway." And I'm thinking, I didn't have anything to do with that. Your opinion is your opinion. My opinion is my opinion. Why are you putting that negative energy onto me? He said that with the utmost confidence, and I saw him and the other gentleman laugh and think that it was funny to try to put his bad opinions off on me. So hopefully that will not be the case on today's show whenever we talk about Rob's terrible opinion that he shared yesterday. So let me give you an itinerary of today's show. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Nate Taylor. Normally he joins us at 4 o'clock. Had to move some things around. Super Bowl week, I think you guys understand that. At 4 o'clock, we will have Mitch Holthus and Danon Hughes. They will be in studio for the entire 4 o'clock hour, commercial-free. So from 4 to 5, you will not hear a single commercial. It will be myself, it will be Rob Brenton, Mitch Holthus, and Danon Hughes will all be in studio here coming up in a couple of hours. Really excited to really kick off Super Bowl week here on 610 Sports Radio, certainly here on the show. I want to lead today's show a little bit different than how I think we normally would do. Because the breaking news just came across the bottom line on ESPN that Kyrie Irving wants to get traded. And no, we're not going to talk about Kyrie Irving and where he could potentially go. And I don't care about that. I imagine you guys don't care about that. But what I think is interesting is there is not a single person who watches basketball that denies the ability of Kyrie Irving. He is an incredible basketball player. He is one of the biggest headaches that we have in professional sports that at this point, I would say that the headache outweighs the talent. If you're listening to the show a couple of weeks ago, we talked a lot about culture and coaching and how important those two things are. That's what allows you to be an organization that goes from the number one overall pick to playoff wins with Andy Reid, to what we saw in Jacksonville with Doug Peterson. Coach and culture. And if you can get those two things right, then you got a chance to really do some special things. I'm ready to take it one step further, that you much rather have the culture and the camaraderie and the chemistry over the talent. There's no denying Kyrie as a basketball player. He is the greatest dribbler I have ever seen. He's not a guy that you can depend on. He's not a guy that you want to build around. He's not a player that's dependable. So if given the option of taking the slightly lesser player but having far less issues to deal with, you would take that player over Kyrie Irving 100 times out of 100. We're talking about this because you want to know the organization that made that decision a long time ago, the Kansas City Chiefs. Marcus Peters was incredible. Marcus Peters got off to as great of a start that you can as a young corner. There came to a point where it was, we can't do this anymore. You're an incredibly talented player. You take the ball away. You're a tough corner. We don't want to live with this anymore. We're happy to let you go, and we wish you nothing but the best. I think we can see now over the last few months or so that the Chiefs probably had to deal with some things with Tyreek Hill that we don't know anything about. He said that he was complaining to Drew Rosenhaus about targets and carries and just usage in the game. And you think, well, how? You touched the ball more than any person on the team. You were top 10 in touches last year in the league. What were you upset about last year? That's not me saying that. This is Tyreek Hill's own words. I think we know now and can read between the lines there were probably a lot of things happening behind the scenes with the Chiefs that none of us know about where they had to deal with guys' personality. And it came to a point where they thought, hey, we're not doing this anymore. Tyreek Hill is an incredible talent, but we value culture, camaraderie, and chemistry way more than your individual talent. And if you are faced with those two decisions, you will tell the more talented player to leave, like the Brooklyn Nets are about to do to Kyrie Irving. I started thinking of this because of what I heard Andy Reid say yesterday in his press conference and how impressed he was with the young corners and how they developed over the last few months or so. Here's Andy Reid.
Yeah, you had a feeling coming out of training camp. The guys seemed to get along. And as it went on, the season went on, you saw a growth, especially from the young kids, that back end, the secondary, Sky Moore, some of the young guys that were getting decent play time, you could really see the growth there. And it was hard from, I'm sure, a public standpoint to see, but we were seeing it from our side, just how they handled certain plays and leverages and so on. So, but I was impressed with that.
Some of you have been in toxic work environments, hated your boss, maybe hated your coworkers, and eventually you made the decision that you were going to leave that company, that you would come as far as that company was going to take you. Maybe you appreciate your time, maybe you didn't, but you weren't going to be working there anymore. Did you notice within yourself how much easier work was if you went to work every day with people that you actually liked? Not saying you got to be BFFs, not saying you got to be buddy buddies, but you guys were just simply all on the same page. You could communicate with one another. You could work together. That there was a chemistry amongst your coworkers. Doesn't it sound like that's what happened with the Chiefs secondary? Hey, we're all on the same page here. Everybody's working together. We're young guys. We're all on the same point of our career. We're going to push each other. What's that saying? That the rising tide lift all boats? We're going to push each other as the young guys in this room. And we don't need anybody else. We think we can do it with this group. Let's continue to learn. Let's continue to build. Let's all get on the field. Let's all have success. The Chiefs figured out a long time ago that sometimes it's not about having the most talented roster. I don't think the Chiefs have the most talented roster in the league, but I think they have a strong culture. I think there's great chemistry with the team. I think everybody is pushing and pulling in the same direction. And in a lot of situations and a lot of moments, that will beat having the quote-unquote most talented teams. We have seen a lot of teams over the last 10 years loosely thrown together, whether it's in football, whether it's in baseball, whether it's in basketball. We've seen a lot of situations where teams are just trying to compile the most talented roster that they can. That is not the shortcut to success. There has to be that culture. There has to be that chemistry. There has to be that camaraderie. There has to be a sense of togetherness. It's a team sport. You're dealing with people. And I think Andy Reid gets that and understands that better than most coaches. Yesterday, Frank Clark told a story about his relationship with Andy Reid. And Rob and I were kind of going back and forth, and back and forth sounds a little extreme, but we disagree on Chris Jones. And Chris Jones, as he plays his final game under this contract with the team, I think Chris Jones is going to show a willingness to take a little bit of a discount to continue to stay in Kansas City. I think Chris Jones understands that the Chiefs have something really, really special, something that's really hard to find. and something that's worth a little bit more than getting every single dollar that you can in the NFL. And when you listen to this story between Frank Clark and his relationship to Andy Reid, I think you'll understand why Frank Clark continued to stay on this team, why he was willing to restructure his contract. I think you'll also see why Andy Reid continues to be one of the most successful coaches in the history of the National Football League.
I love him because of the man he is first, you know, not the coach, the man he is. And I feel like if you know him from that standpoint, you'll be able to attest to what I'm saying. A lot of guys know him as a coach, and they only see the coach side of him. I've actually been fortunate enough to see the other side of him, where I've had a lot of conversations with him, you know, from that standpoint, and just, you know, helping me become a better father, helping me understand life a little bit more in some of my toughest situations that I have to endure over the last 2 years. And just sticking by me, you know, understanding that, you know, guys do have, you know, some bad times. Guys do, you know, F up sometimes. But, you know, sometimes you got to have, you know, those guys there. You know, it's the guys there for those guys that mess up, you know, are just important, you know, for me. And for him, I mean, for me, having Coach Reid there, you know, was big, you know, because my father, man, he passed a few years ago. You know what I'm saying? I lost my father in the house fire a few years ago. So, you know, the father figures, you know, are there of a lack at times, you know what I mean? And having a guy like that, you know, I spend a lot of time with Coach, you know what I mean? We spend, 70% of our week we at the building. You know, we ain't here from 8 in the morning to 6 at night sometimes, you know, in campus even longer. So I spent a lot of time with Andy, and we've grown, we have a great relationship. So, you know, the things we ever talk about on the record and things we've talked about off the record have shaped our relationship, and you know, brung us so close, man. I feel like I'm able to talk about anything. And just, you know, winning that game, man, was, you know, one of those things. We kind of pissed it off the second year together. You know what I mean? We lost the, you know, out in Tampa Bay last year. You know, Bengals came in, got rid of us. And, you know, just to be able to get back, you know, my fourth year here is just dope.
Football is about a lot of things. Football is about controlling the line of scrimmage. Football is about winning the turnover margin. Football is about running the football successfully. It's about having talented players. It's about all of those things. Football is about people. It is about finding a way to connect 53 individuals and getting them to all operate with one common goal. And you've seen it in various situations. If you got a couple of people that are not connected in a way, it can bring the whole thing down. The Brooklyn Nets are as talented as any basketball team in the NBA. They have never been on the same page. And if you don't have guys on the same page, especially your stars and your leaders, then you will not go very far. You'll go to the second round of the playoffs and get quietly eliminated. You'll ask to get traded. You will miss extended time the way that we've seen Kyrie Irving. If you were given the option of taking the culture, the chemistry, the camaraderie, and all of those things, you will take them every single time. Than just outright taking the more talented player that might not fit into what you're doing. So I want to play this cut for you guys here really quickly, because Rob said this yesterday, and I admit it kind of took me aback. It stunned me a little bit. It was a shock to me that Rob said this.
I think Philadelphia's like the only city in the world that's claim to fame food you could argue is better than KC barbecue.
Whoa,
could on. Argue.
You hear it in my voice. Whoa. You've gone a little too far here. It's my fault. I've given Rob too much freedom. I've let Rob talk, gets to play his music. We get to laugh and joke about Kansas basketball. You know, we're booking KU football players. You know, I really try to make Rob feel like it's an us thing, that it's a we thing. But maybe I've miscalculated. Maybe I've let Rob grow out of control where he feels comfortable enough to come on a Kansas City sports talk show and spew this nonsense.
I think Philadelphia's like the only city in the world that's claim to fame food you could argue is better than KC barbecue.
Whoa.
Could argue.
Rob, I'll let you make the argument. That's not an argument that I can make. I don't think that's an argument that the text line can make. You're the only person out here making it. I'll let you make the argument. What's the argument that Philly cheesesteaks are better than barbecue? What's the argument?
I want to reiterate what I said. Their food could be argued as better than Kansas City, because if you look at the food landscape in the NFL and you look at the signature dishes across the league, the only city, the only one, two cities are the only ones that will be in KC's ballpark, and that is the Philly cheesesteak, which, let's be honest, is an elite sandwich, creme de la creme, and the buffalo wing. Those are the only two I'll hear an argument for being in the same category as Kansas City barbecue. Every other city, goodbye. See you later. Chicago deep dish pizza, no one wants your trash lasagna. Get out of here.
We're going to take a break. We might respond to what Rob had to say. If you want to send a text and respond to Rob, I might consider reading it on the other side. Rob said this yesterday.
I think Philadelphia's like the only city in the world that's claim to fame food you could argue is better than KC barbecue.
Whoa.
Could argue.
It is one of the most false statements that have ever been uttered on this radio station. It's not truthful. It's not accurate. It's a lie. I'm thinking about having Rob sent home. That's what I'm thinking about. I went down to HR earlier today and tried to figure out a way to get Rob removed from the building. They told me that I need more evidence than just that one audio clip. I said, I'll get to work on it. So I'll consider reading your text on the other side. And we haven't really talked a whole lot specifically about the game next week. I wrote down five very preliminary things that I think heading into Super Bowl 57. I'll share them with you on the other side. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by the DePasquale Moore Law Firm. Remember, Mike's got this on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Mitchell Schwartz, and you are listening to my friend C-Dot.
My former friend, my former pal, Mitchell Schwartz joins us in studio. Mitch, you knew how important banging the drum was to me.
On The Drive.
We'll get back to Super Bowl talk here in a little bit. I promise you. Yesterday on the show, Rob said this.
I think Philadelphia's like the only city in the world that's claim to fame food you could argue is better than KC barbecue.
Whoa.
Could argue.
And I'm looking at the text line right now. Now, some of you think that Rob should be committed, which I don't think is a bad idea. And some of you are saying that maybe Rob has a good point. Our guy Reggie in Anaheim and says, I don't think that Rob's take is that terrible. A Philly cheesesteak is a worldwide dish. That's true. I love a Philly cheesesteak. I know Rob does. I imagine many of you do. But if we're comparing it to Kansas City barbecue, one is substantially easier to make than the other one. Substantially easier. You know how hard it is to make good barbecue? You need the time, the coal, the wood. You need a lot more. They make Philly cheesesteaks in cafeterias. We've had them before. Get you the meat, chop, chop it up, put a little onions, put a little. I'm not saying that's as good as the authentic. But it probably takes you what, Rob? 10,
15 minutes to make a good Philly cheesesteak? You know how long it takes for you to get them ribs just right? For you to get that burn in, that pulled pork, that brisket? So yeah, that's why the Philly cheesesteak is a worldwide entity. You can make it anywhere. But that elite barbecue, you notice there aren't many places that can do barbecue well. It's what? Three? It's three places in the world that we think do barbecue at a really high level. Kansas City, Texas, Carolina. There aren't a lot of places that we think do great barbecue because it's tough, because it's difficult. Not everybody has the gumption to try something that you might fail. But a Philly cheesesteak. It's just a chopped up cheeseburger. You know how easy it is to make a burger? That's one of the first things you learn how to cook. It's like being proud of making spaghetti. Everybody can make spaghetti. Everybody can make tacos. They're hard to make. Tacos are super easy. This is a ridiculous take. Let's not try to reason it. Let's not try to rationalize it. Let's not try to say, oh, I see what Rob was trying to say. He's wrong. I want to get back to the good old days where we would just tell people, your opinion is stupid. We used to, well, now we can agree to disagree. Not if you're wrong. I don't want to agree to disagree. Not if you're incorrect. Not if you're spreading misinformation. Not on this show. Not on my watch.
I think Philadelphia's like the only city in the world that's claim to fame food you could argue is better than KC barbecue.
Whoa.
Could argue. Couple important words there. Could argue is a key one. And two, yes, the cafeteria cheesesteak is light years worse than KC barbecue. But I'm comparing the creme de la creme to the other top of the line stuff. And a cheesesteak in Philly with some onions and some cheese, that is as good as it gets. And I could argue it's a better individual food than any other NFL food. I would still lean KC barbecue, but it's like ESPN's FPI. It has Chiefs and Eagles at 50-50 right now. Cheesesteak and barbecue, the FPI, is probably 51-49. It's the only one that can be held up to the same standard. Because a cheesesteak in Philly, it just hits different, man. It is phenomenal.
We can move on. I'm trying to figure out how you disrespected Kansas City and New Orleans in the same take. Like, this take was so wild to me. You disrespected two elite food cities in this country. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll be joined by Nate Taylor of The Athletic. He'll join us in studio. So, Rob, I wrote down five things that I think for this game. Now, I've got more thoughts, but I'm kind of saving them for next week. It's going to be wall-to-wall Super Bowl next week. You know, we've got guest schedule. We got a lot of fun stuff planned. We should. It's the Super Bowl. So this is really the first time today that I would say we're really diving into the game and giving you more game-specific points. Not really talking about Chris Jones' contract or long-term. You know, looking at the game. I like the over in this game. I think there's going to be points scored. I don't think that either team has seen an offense quite like what the other team has. Like, Kansas City has not played a team with the offense that I think Philadelphia has. You could maybe argue San Francisco would be the team that's closest that the Chiefs have played, but Jimmy Garoppolo's mobility is nothing like Jalen Hurts' mobility, and Christian McCaffrey was there for, what, 72 hours before they played the Kansas City Chiefs? So that would probably be the closest team from a play style that I think they've played this season, but I don't think the Chiefs' defense has played anything like Philadelphia. And I know Philadelphia hasn't played an offense like them. That's another thing that I'm looking at in this game. I got a lot of respect for Philly's defense. Really tough defensive line, great secondary. Rob, what quarterbacks have they gone against? Because we can go up and down the schedule for the Philadelphia Eagles. Is there a quarterback that they've played that you think is a high-end quarterback? Because I'm looking at the first six games of the season for them. Detroit, Minnesota, Washington, Jacksonville, Arizona, and Dallas. And if you remember that first matchup against Dallas, Cooper Rush was starting at that time. Who's the best quarterback that we think the Philadelphia's gone up against this year? Is it Trevor Lawrence? That's the best quarterback that they've gone up against? So No Joe Burrow this year. No Josh Allen this year. No Herbert this year. Did they go up against a top five quarterback this season? I don't think they did. So as great as their defense is, you were testing it against Daniel Jones twice. You tested it against Tyler Heinicke and Carson Wentz and Sam Howell or whoever in the hell they got starting for the Commanders. Justin Fields. And no, this is the best quarterback in the league. This is the best quarterback in the world. This is one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks that have ever lived. Your defense hasn't seen anything like what Kansas City is. I think both teams are going to score here. I like the over. I think the numbers are inflated on Philadelphia's defense. They play from ahead a lot, so they can really get after the quarterback. I think the sacks are a little bit inflated. I think their secondary is a little bit overvalued because of the quarterbacks that they've gone up against. I don't want to put them in the full Buffalo category, but we've seen a lot of times that Buffalo will have the number one, number two, number three ranked defense. And then when they go outside their division where they're playing the Little Sisters of the Poor at quarterback, we really see that Buffalo defense get tested. I think the numbers are a little bit inflated on Philly's defense. I also think you can run on Philadelphia. We're talking about a middle-tier rush defense. Not bad. Not great. Give about 125 yards a game. This is a game in which the Chiefs should be able to establish the run. Now, will they establish the run? That is always a question with the Kansas City Chiefs. But this is a game in which I think the Chiefs should be able to run the football effectively and should remain balanced for most of the game. I think this is the most important game for them from a turnover differential standpoint, not just because of the game, the magnitude of the game in the Super Bowl. I also think they're playing the best team that they've played this season in their ability to take the ball away. Number one in sacks, number three in turnovers, a defense that just thrives off forcing you to make a mistake, tipping a pass, intercepting the football. They were one of the best teams in the league at doing that. They were also one of the best teams in the league at turning and converting those turnovers into points. I preach turnover differential. This is the game that I think it's most important because if you let the turnover differential get away in this matchup, you get blown out. You lose by 14 if you lose the turnover differential to a team that can control the line of scrimmage the way that they do and a team that can score. I think turnover differential is going to be big. I also think that this game is really about Frank Clark. You remember the stat back in the day with Travis Relaford at KU where if he scored double-digit points, KU was like 79-4 over his career at Kansas? I think the Chiefs have a very similar thing going with Frank Clark. You do not beat the Chiefs if Frank Clark plays well. You look at these two games in the postseason and the effect that he's had on the game. I don't think you win this game if Frank Clark doesn't play well. I think you need a great effort from Frank Clark. And that doesn't mean that he has to go out there and have three sacks and be in line to win Super Bowl MVP. I think Frank Clark needs to have an impact on the game in order for the Chiefs to win. We'll run some of these by Nate Taylor. Nate Taylor will join us in studio next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by the Deep Pasquale Moore Law Firm. Remember, Mike's got this on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs and the home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio. It's 4 o'clock on Friday, so it's time for Nate Taylor to join The Drive.
I knew in training camp last year that they had chosen Orlando Brown over Tyrann Mathieu.
You can check out all his Chiefs news and notes at his very athletic online publication.
Oh, okay. I see what you did there.
Here's C-Dot and Nate.
We're very happy to be joined in studio by Nate Taylor. He's brought to you by Comfort Systems Heating and Cooling. Family-owned, family-operated. MyComfortSystems.com. Nate, this is the first time that we have moved you all season. I think you will understand that we moved you for a commercial-free hour with Mitch Holtis and Dannon Hughes in studio.
Oh, okay.
So you know what I mean?
That
was the only time Mitch Holtis could do. And if I got to pick you or Mitch Holtis, I'm sorry, Nate. I'm picking Mitch Holtis. I got to do it.
I am not the voice of the Chiefs. So
yeah, I got to do it.
I mean, I understand, you know. 4 o'clock on 2:30. Basically. No, man, happy to be here. Just came back from the last practice that I'm going to see this season because they're practicing tomorrow on Saturday, and then obviously they'll practice in Arizona, But it'll just be one reporter. It'll be a pool reporter from the Pro Football Writers Association. So, yeah, that was the last practice I saw today.
So let's start with this question, and we'll talk a little bit of game. We'll talk some big picture. We'll talk injuries. We'll talk a lot here over the course of the next hour or so. Next week when you sit down and you start typing.
Yes.
And you start writing about the game, because I read your story about Beach and just sort of how the roster got to this point. But next week you're going to write a story about the game.
Yes.
What's your biggest thought? What's your biggest impression as we are headed to see the two best teams in the National Football League play each other?
Yeah, it's I feel like John Madden. It is the best offensive line in football against the second best defensive line in terms of generating pressure. And then, of course, it's the best defensive line generating pressure versus the second best offensive line. Because of what the Eagles do up front compared to the Chiefs, I find that to be the most fascinating football part of the game. Obviously, some people have already talked about probably Hassan Riddick versus Orlando Brown. You know, Jason Kelce potentially going up against Chris Jones in one-on-one situations. It's gorgeous from a football standpoint, because if the Eagles cannot run the ball and if they get behind their script, then that really does allow, you know, Frank Clark, Chris Jones, Mike Dana to really present pressure that maybe the Philadelphia Eagles really haven't seen all season. Much of the NFC Championship game was dictated by the fact that Philadelphia could run the football. They never got really into these lot of third and 10 situations where Jalen Hurts had to obviously account for what Nick Bosa was going to do. If the Chiefs can protect Patrick Mahomes, if Patrick Mahomes' mobility is better from the AFC Championship game, then there are yards to be had. There are schemes to really help the offense move the ball down the field. The Eagles led the league in the regular season with 70 sacks. 70. The Chiefs were number two with 55. It's a gigantic gap because, as Eric Bieniemy said today, they have secondary rotational pass rushers who are really, really good. So they never get tired. They're one of the more fresher defensive lines throughout the course of a 60-minute game. But if Mahomes has time to, you know, escape, scramble, improvise, if you get through the first level of the defense, I think there are plays to be made against the second and the third level of the defense. So it's a fascinating matchup. And, I feel like John Madden, but everything pretty much starts up front on both sides of the ball, because I think it's one versus two in both sides when you really look at how good – these linemen are for both the Chiefs and obviously the Eagles.
I think if you want to simplify this game down to one player, I think that player is Frank Clark.
Mm.
On the Monday after the Super Bowl, we're talking about Frank Clark played well.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the Kansas City Chiefs won that game. If we're talking about how Frank Clark didn't show up, didn't register a tackle for loss, didn't get a sack in the game, that means that offensive line for Philadelphia was
moving people.
Was working.
Yeah, right.
And you just don't beat the way that Philadelphia has played this season if their offensive line is playing incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really comes down to Frank Clark. It's odd for an X-factor to be a starting defensive player the way that he is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he has built this reputation up of being playoff Frank and stepping up in big moments. I don't know if he's gone up against a test like this. And not even San Francisco's offensive line a couple of years ago in the Super Bowl. I would say that Philly's offensive line is better than that team's.
Yeah.
Can he have a significant impact on this game? I think this game really hinges on how well Frank Clark plays.
And it might not even determine if he gets a sack or not, Carrington. Part of it might be, can you just ensure that Jalen Hurts doesn't become a true dual threat guy, right? If you can contain him in the RPO action, obviously they're going to run some zone reads, which obviously the key for part of that scheme is, what does a defensive end do? Does he want to get upfield? Does he want to obviously play contain and help everything sort of flow back to the middle of the field? Obviously if they do get in those third and eights, those third and tens, can he generate pressure to get to Jalen Hurts, who is obviously mobile in his own right? So, yeah, it's something that I haven't totally thought about beyond just, hey, their entire defensive end their entire defensive line has to play well. This is obviously might be a game where they may test Frank Clark pretty early and then say, oh, if he's disciplined in some of our run schemes, then let's go to the other side and let's pick on the rookie, George Karlaftis, because he just hasn't seen it at this level with this amount of talent. But the Chiefs have been quietly very good at stopping the run. So if that holds up, then it does set Frank Clark up for having another memorable postseason game where he has a real imprint on the game. And that, of course, will help, you know, set up one-on-ones for Chris Jones. Because if I was the Eagles, I would do what a lot of teams have done, is just say, hey, we got to find as many ways possible to have the center help out Chris Jones in terms of these double teams and just hope that you could at least limit him. But that's been more complicated now because teams are dedicating so much to him, and now Frank Clark has obviously had, you know, two really good games in the postseason.
Are you a believer in Philadelphia's defense? I asked that question because, you know, a lot of, you know, stats are schedule-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Who'd you play? Who was healthy when you played them? When did you play them in the season? Has Philadelphia gone up against a quarterback that you think is great this year? I mean, Trevor Lawrence really emerged, but they played Jacksonville in week 4 of the NFL season. I mean, is the best quarterback that they've played this year, was it Dak Prescott?
Yeah.
If that's the best quarterback you've played,
then we're going up some levels on Sunday.
The degree of difficulty, that's like playing on like pro. I mean, yes. I ain't gonna disrespect Dak Prescott, but this is beyond all Madden. This is like playing the creator of the game.
Yeah, and look,
they haven't seen an offense anywhere close to what Kansas City is. Not coaching, not quarterback-wise.
Yes.
They haven't seen anything close to Kansas City. So I asked you that question because I think we saw a lot of times where Buffalo would come into Kansas City with the top-ranked defense. Well, that's because you were playing Zach Wilson and Mac Jones. That's why you were able to be the number one defense in the league. Not because you really are the number one defense in the league.
I want to remind people that they put 44 on the 49ers with Nick Bosa on the field. It was the one game in the regular season, much to your point, Carrington, that I could actually, okay, I can hold on to this. This is something that I can actually – I've seen it with my own eyes. I know what the offense can do against top-level defenses because they did it against one of the better units in the league. I'm gonna just run through it real quick. They played Kenny Pickett after the bye week. Then they got Houston. They lost to Taylor Heinicke in a game that was very weird, and they had a lot of turnovers. So it was self-inflicted wounds for their first loss. I don't even know who played for Indianapolis when they got to that game.
I don't think it matters.
Aaron Rodgers put 33 points. Jordan Love was in that game too. So it was sort of a back and forth shootout. Green Bay couldn't stop anybody. Then they played Tennessee. Again, don't know who played in that game. Daniel Jones, Justin Fields with no one around him, and they still scored 20 points, mostly because Justin Fields was so elusive in the run game. Then they got 40 put on them by Dak Prescott. Again, I have no idea who played for the Saints, but that was the Gardner Minshew game. They didn't really need it for seeding purposes. And then they obviously played the junior varsity that is the New York Giants before the Giants obviously made it to the postseason. What I just told you is they have really not been tested on defense really at all since October. It's crazy. Like, Kyler Murray might be the most talented quarterback they've played all season. I mean, it's either him or Dak Prescott is what is to answer your question, Carrington. So, yeah, they also haven't played a tight end like Travis Kelce either. So it's one thing to sort of rep these things. It's to say, hey, well, we just play, you know, George Kittle. George Kittle's good. He is good. He's not Travis Kelce. He's not Travis Kelce with a quarterback who is capable of accentuating all his skills, particularly when plays break down or obviously when you get to that secondary route. Like the 4th-and-1 we saw against, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals, where I Jesse Bates, you did such a good job. You also gave up a touchdown. Like, I don't know what you want to do. I know Philly has really good cornerbacks on Darius Slay and Bradbury. But they really, it is such a hard team to evaluate for everything you've just asked and hopefully the information I've given, which is, I mean, Justin Fields had a good day. They still won, but he had a good day. And, you know, they haven't been really behind in the postseason so far. So one of the big keys, I think, for the game is how does Philly respond if they're down 10-0 in the first quarter? when, you know, you may not be able to run the ball on first and second down, or obviously you don't have the dual threat ability where the defense knows, oh, you're passing the ball. Like, you have to pass the ball to stay in the game. So if I was the Chiefs, I would work, like, hard to maybe get a lead early and sort of see if you can sort of dictate the tempo from there forth. I know Andy, if they win the coin toss, is going to say, well, you know, I always like to have the ball to start the second half to make the game adjustments. But maybe this is one of the rare times where you take the coin toss and say, let's just get on them early and let's see how they respond, because they have not faced a single moment of adversity in the playoffs, whereas the Chiefs have faced all the adversity in their two playoff games.
Yeah, and I think that's a substantial difference. I mean, even towards the end of the season. So, you know, you mentioned the postseason. You mentioned the fact that the Eagles just – I mean, they played the Giants in the first game of the postseason. They played San Francisco. I mean, they have outscored their opponents 69-14 in the postseason. So they have just smoked two teams. I mean, the final month of the season, I don't know how much you can really take from that, because they didn't have Jalen Hurts for two of the last four games that they've had. So the end of the season is very odd for Philadelphia, where you feel like with Kansas City, you know, they were kind of building towards something in the postseason. You're right. They overcome that adversity. They finally slay the dragon, which was Cincinnati, and they finally beat that team. Like, I think this is as even of a game that you and I maybe ever talked about. I think this is completely down the middle. It comes down to execution, who plays well, who doesn't turn the ball over. I think Kansas City's strengths line up really well against the weaknesses of Philadelphia. I think the strength of the Eagles match up really well against Kansas City. I think both teams are going to be able to score in this game. I don't think that either defense is capable of holding either team to 17 points or 20 points. I think this is a 31-27 kind of game.
Here's something I'm going to say that might sound a bit odd. Cincinnati has better receivers. It's just a fact. I know Philadelphia has Devontae, and they have AJ. But Carrington, what if the cornerbacks play really well? What if they tackle as well as they did against the Bengals? Then I think you get to a point where this game might lean heavily towards the Chiefs, because I tend to agree with you. As long as Mahomes is not pressured on every drop back like we saw in Super Bowl 55, I believe the Chiefs will score in the 20s to, you know, low 30s, right? I'm going to give them that 27-34 range. And obviously if they don't turn the ball over. If Jalen Hurts cannot throw the ball downfield because these cornerbacks are tight in coverage, and, you know, if he has to start leaning on, you know, Goddard, the tight end, more, which will be matched up a lot against Justin Reed, who, by the way, has also played well over the course of the last 5 to 6 weeks. The secondary might be an advantage that people don't particularly realize, but we all just saw them play Ja'Marr Chase, and Ja'Marr Chase did not beat them. He had one amazing catch on a 50-50 ball with two guys in coverage, like in proper coverage. He just jumped over them and caught the pass on 4th and 6. T. Higgins is very good. I would say he's a better 50-50 ball getter than A.J. Brown, which, again, I know might sound odd to people. The Cincinnati Bengals have better receivers. They have a better 1-2 duo than Philadelphia. So if the cornerbacks can play as well as they did in the AFC Championship game on Sunday, if you have L'Jarius Sneed at your disposal, which I think is the case, because I think by this time next week he'll probably be back at practice through the concussion protocol. If you have these rookies and obviously L'Jarius Sneed to sort of mix and alter the cover schemes along the game, then maybe Jalen Hurts doesn't have a ton of guys to throw to. I'm more willing to trust Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, you know, Matt Nagy in their scheme to get someone like Juju Smith-Schuster open or Kadarius Toney open, because I know what the quarterback can do with his accuracy, with his scrambling ability, and his improvisation. Again, Jalen Hurts has been very good this season, but I wonder, against a secondary that has only gotten better as the season has gone on, what do those passes look like when it's not Joe Burrow throwing the ball and it's Jalen Hurts trying to get, you know, one-on-one coverage against A.J. Brown. I'm not sure A.J. Brown's going to win every time. And that's wild to say, but I just saw it in the AFC Championship game.
Coming up at the top of the hour, I want to get your updates on all the injuries and where we're headed into Super Bowl 57. I want to ask you this really quickly. I know we're up against the break here, Rob. I think Chris Jones is the player on the Chiefs most helped by them winning a championship.
Oh, in terms of legacy?
If Chris Jones has two rings,
mm-hmm.
he just got his first team All-Pro. If you're the best player on a championship defense, especially one that's been on a run the way that the Chiefs have been,
yeah.
you get a lot of consideration for the Hall of Fame. Andy's in. Mahomes is in. Kelsey is in. I think the player most helped by them getting their second ring is Chris Jones.
I can't disagree with you. That is an unsalable point. Especially if Chris has a game like he had last Sunday, right? What if he whips Jason Kelsey? What if he whips Landon Dickerson, who's really good? What if he goes out on the edge and beats Lane Johnson? That's Hall of Fame type stuff. So, yes, I agree with you. If to benefit most of the core people who've been involved since Mahomes became the starter in 2018, yeah, Chris has the most to gain. Because like you said, all those guys, I'm pretty sure, are first ballot Hall of Famers in their own right. But who will you remember most from the Chiefs defense? Yeah, it might be Chris Jones. It would either be Chris Jones or Frank Clark. And I thought in 19 and 20 it was going to be Tyrann Mathieu, which tells you how quickly things change in this league. But yeah, I agree. If Chris Jones has a sack and a half or two sacks and they win, he's going to be in the Ring of Honor, and he's probably going to be in Canton as well.
But I was going to say, regarding Tyrann Mathieu, he certainly has had the better individual career between him and Chris Jones. But Chris Jones being a part of both of the championships, if they win.
Mm-hmm. Being one of the better players on all 5 years of them being in the title game in the conference.
That just carries a significant weight. Coming up at the top of the hour, I want to get your thoughts on all the injuries. Just update us on where guys are from a health perspective. Nate Taylor is joining us in studio right now. He's brought to you by Comfort Systems Heating and Cooling. Family-owned, family-operated, mycomfortsystems.com. We'll get Nate's updates on everything injury-wise heading into Super Bowl 57. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.